Did you ever have a parent or a teacher say to you, you know, you have two ears and one mouth, so you should be listening more than you're speaking? Some Greek philosopher, and I think it was Epictetus, originally said that.
Oh.
So back in the day.
It's so brave of you to even try to pronounce that name, because I don't even know how to pronounce that name, but I definitely have seen that ascribed to him. A number of different parental figures growing up definitely mentioned that, as well as teachers, that we have two ears and one mouth for a reason.
Absolutely. And I want to introduce people to you. This is Embark. I'm Liz Solar. And that lovely person on the other end of the conversation is Dr. Laura Janusik. She has her PhD in active listening, actually communications. Professor Emerita, is that for Rockhurst University in Kansas City, Missouri. Also, you have founded your own company, which is Listening to Change. Let's get that right. Listening to Change. And we're going to hear all about, or we're going to be listening to, the art of listening and why that's so important. Welcome to Embark, Laura. I'm so glad you're here today.
Thank you, Liz. I'm happy to be here.
Listening, we hear so much about it these days. It is important to be able to listen to people, to hear what they have to say. And somehow, so many of us get it wrong. Let's start with some of the things that get in the way of our listening.
Wow, listening barriers. And that's a great start. I think one of the things that gets in the way of our listening is a lot of people, most people actually, never get any listening training at all. The most recent statistic I heard was only 2% of the population ever receives any listening training, because it's assumed that because we know how to hear, we know how to listen. The way that I distinguish those two things is hearing is just taking in the audio stimuli. And of course, we can listen with our eyes as well. So the stimuli with our eyes. But then we have to take it into our brain, specifically into our prefrontal cortex, where we assign meaning to it. So that's actually the way that I describe listening, is listening is the process by which we ascribe personal meaning to something, meaning that we just put words to it. And I think that is difficult for people to understand, because they think that since they grew up hearing, they obviously grew up knowing how to listen. That's a huge misnomer. That is not the case at all. Oh, I have so many barriers, Liz. I don't even know where you want me to stop. Maybe I should stop there before I get to another one.
Well, I want to hear all the barriers, because I think we'll all be able to hear something or find something of ourselves in it. But going back to only 2% of us really learn how to listen. So that happens from a very young age. How much, and this is another gem from childhood, children should be seen and not heard. How much does that play into our ability to listen and feel listened to?
And that's a great point. I think our primary caregivers really are the ones who teach us indirectly how to listen. And I say indirectly because if you grew up in the United States, chances are you had someone when you were young say to you, "Look at me when I'm talking to you." In our little child brain, we went, okay, listening means eye contact. And eye contact can or doesn't have to be a part of listening, but we put so much weight on that in our culture, the United States culture, that when people don't look at us, we think they're poor listeners. But there are actually a number of reasons that people don't have eye contact while listening, and they still are making great personal meaning.
I would like to delve into that a little bit more here, Laura, because many of us get turned off if we don't have eyes on us while we're speaking and we feel ignored, offended, whatever other hurt we feel is being inflicted. Why are some ways people would not make eye contact?
Great question. And this kind of goes back to my background. I was the president of the International Listening Association in 2010. Who knew such a thing existed? And I have also been a listening researcher for well over 20 years. So I read as much of the literature out there about listening and the research about listening as I can. And when I can't find something, I will go to my research friends around the world that I've met through the International Listening Association and say, hey, do you have anything in your language that supports this particular idea? One of the things that I've been looking for that I haven't been able to find is any research that supports the idea. Any of our nonverbals are actually tied to comprehension. I like to say that listening is a social and a cultural norm, meaning that each society identifies specific nonverbals that mean listening in that culture, but it doesn't transcend culture necessarily. In the United States, we grew up with this story that eye contact means listening, but we also know that there are people in the United States who don't have eye contact. Two in particular that I can name off the top of my head. Number one, people who are on the spectrum for autism oftentimes will not have eye contact. And the reason for that is because it's too much stimuli for them to process. And it really doesn't have anything to do with them processing the word stimuli that they're receiving. So they don't do the eye contact. There's also a great new piece of research that was published in March of 2020 that identifies listening as a habit and four dominant listening habits that we have. And a dominant listening habit simply means what we choose to listen to or listen for. And we don't even recognize that we're doing that. It just is something that we've learned to do along the way. So, for example, an analytical dominant listener is listening for the facts and the details. A conceptual listener is listening for the big ideas. Now, the reflective listener is very interesting because the reflective listener listens to match the current stimuli with their past experience. So they're going into their long-term memory to try to go, do I have any experience in this area? What happened the last time we tried this? What's going to work well? What's not going to work well based on what I know from the past? What we're finding, and I say we, those of us who are certified in Echo Listening Profile, that particular instrument, what we're finding is people who are reflective listeners oftentimes are the ones who look like they're bad listeners. They don't have a lot of eye contact. And I do think that much of that is for similar reasons as those on the spectrum. It's just another stimuli that doesn't add any value for them because they're searching their long-term memory.
One of your interests is precognition. So you're thinking while you're listening, which feels like, oh yeah, sure, why wouldn't you be able to? But sometimes it's like, what are you thinking about as someone is speaking? It would be optimal in order to understand them for you to be really engaged in listening. I find this really fascinating. You had brought up people who are on the spectrum because we're talking about some of the barriers to listening as well. I have a child who had learning disabilities, auditory processing. Mm-hmm. So he's one of these people, if you give them, here are the five steps to take, on a good day can take in maybe two at a time. If he was listening to something, it would almost be like that Charlie Brown, you know, adult speaking to a kid. It was like that, wah, wah, wah. So how do you, if you're talking to a general population, how do you get people on this same page? And we know that people are taking in information, whether it's through their eyes or through their ears, and they are hearing the same thing or similar things, and they are processing it differently. You know, that's on, you know, definitely one end of the spectrum, but we all have a little bit of that. We are hearing things or listening to things, and they sound different. What we're picking up from that is something very different. So even the message gets somehow subverted. Perhaps it's that thing that you were talking about, the experiences going back into memory, and what does that really mean?
Yeah, that's exactly right, Liz, because when we are listening to or for certain information, that means that the other information is going basically in one ear and out the other, as they say. We're not even processing that or taking, we can't process it because we're not taking it in. So our listening dominance or our listening habits really do reduce the meaning that we can make. And then the other one that you just referred to is we have to go into our long-term memory to retrieve definitions of words to help them make sense in the sentence that we're receiving. And you probably remember from elementary school the difference between connotation and denotation. Denotation being the dictionary definition of the word and connotation being our personal definition. So our connotations really do color a lot of the words that we have in terms of positive, negative, or the feelings that we have associated with them. You know, so just two examples for you. Once my younger brother was bit by our family dog when the family dog was eating, and my brother was about 5 years old at the time. I was maybe seven. And so from that point on, the word dog was scary to me because I just saw my brother's cheek bleeding. He was okay, but, you know, I recognized that dogs could bite and they could be really scary. So I've had a lifelong fear of dogs that I've tried to overcome. And so, but I always have to talk myself through it. When I see a dog, I have to go, okay, this is not Susie. This looks like a friendly dog. So I have to pump myself up for that. The other example is I used to hate the word dramatic, and I have had people call me dramatic in the past. And to me, I was just being emotional. But when they used the word dramatic, I thought of, you know, these Greek plays and things like that. And so that would just set me off even more. So we all have these connotations of words that we do like or we don't like, and they really color it. And another one, actually, I said only two, but I'll give you three. It's the words that aren't said. Very young, before I started studying communication, if somebody was going to apologize to me, I had to hear the words, I'm sorry. If they didn't say I'm sorry in the sentence, then I didn't consider it an apology. You know, that was a huge aha moment for me. All of these people who had tried to apologize to me in the past that I wouldn't accept because they didn't include the words that were important to me.
Interesting how words can play such an important part in what we're perceiving and how we react to what's said to us or what's implied to us. There's text and subtext. How do you get people to listen when perhaps they think, well, I hear your words. Your words on their face are fine, but your tone does not match the message that you're delivering right now. How do we deal with that?
Yeah. What research will tell us is that we do listen to the subtext or the tone much more than we listen to the actual words. So when we make meaning, the large percentage of the time we're going to make meaning of the subtext as opposed to the actual words that are used.
Getting back to some of the barriers, because I feel like there are so many barriers to listening. It feels like such a simple thing, but we are an overly articulated, incredibly extroverted, and, you know, super connected through technology right now. And the information just whizzes by us all the time. And people are speaking in shorthand and using, there's always a new vocabulary word that has to do with, you know, social issues or professional issues. And it can be very confusing in all of it's happening at once around us. How do we focus? How do we know what to focus on? What's important when there's so many other, it's that stimuli where we're all exposed to it.
And that is a great question. And I wish I could answer that in the time that we have. We can't. I think, though, one of the things that we can do is we can take more control over the words that we use and the words that we assume other people make the same meaning that we do. Perfect example. And I challenge anybody listening to this podcast to try this. First, define what respectful listening means to you. And then secondly, go out and query 5 to 10 people, and ideally people that you get along really well with and people who kind of rub you the wrong way. And what you're going to find is people have very different meanings of the word respectful. For example, I was working with a company doing some consulting, and I was working with a leadership team, and I asked that question. And one of the people said, well, respectful listening means saying what you think, no matter how hard it is, right? It doesn't matter if it's going to hurt somebody's feelings or not. They got to know the truth. And then there was another person on the team who said, No, you're only supposed to really listen to the positive things. So you shouldn't be saying anything negative. You should only be saying the positive things. You know, so right there, there's this built-in conflict with what people perceive to be respectful and disrespectful. Each of them, though they thought they were respectful listeners, were criticizing the other for being disrespectful, but it's because they had a totally different definition of what that term meant.
It really puts a lot of pressure on the speaker, person delivering the message, to be all things to all people. And we can get into a little bit of that. But I want to go into your own experience, because I think we teach what we need to learn as well. And you had told me that you got into this field, this particular specialty, for a reason.
For two reasons. I did not ever pursue listening. Listening pursued me. So the quick version of the story is I was in my early 30s. I decided to go back and get my master's degree because I was having my one-third life crisis. I plan on living to be 100. And I was paired with an advisor named Andrew Wolven, who was a leading world expert in listening. He used that term a lot, Liz, and it just kind of made my skin crawl. And I said to him, Andy, I'm not going to become a listening person. And he was very gracious. He said, Laura, you can become whatever you want to be. So fast forward to my final semester of my master's program, and I remembered that he would be writing my letters of recommendation. So I should probably show a little bit of interest in his passion. I had room in my schedule. I signed up for his listening course. And within 2 weeks, it changed my life. I thought, oh my gosh, this is what listening is? Why don't people understand what listening is? This is crazy. I got to help people understand what listening is. Because I recognized that I had been the world's worst listener up until that point in my life. Two ways. Number one, I always thought I was the smartest person in the room. Even when other people were smarter than me, I thought my idea was better. So I had that, and that was not a good trait, I will tell you. And we know that because it's not a good trait to be in a room with other people like that as well. And then the second thing that I realized I always did was I was the space filler inner. So what I mean is, when there's silence in a conversation, I thought it was my job to fill the silence because I thought everybody else in that conversation had to be equally uncomfortable as I was. And you know what? Many of them were not. And so by me just prattling on and on, you know, to fill that silence, there are so many conversations that never got to be had because of me filling in that space.
Right. And don't underestimate the value of a well-timed pause or silence in a room, too. There's a lot of thinking and a lot of reflecting that can go on there, too. You talked about finding out what listening is. So what is listening?
The quality of listening, I believe, determines the quality of the relationship. And so listening is not only understanding, as we were talking about, the text that's being spoken, but it's also keying into that subtext to see where people are coming from as well. Got different contexts in our lives that we listen in. So we've got personal relationships and we have professional relationships. And one of the awful things that I think has happened in business listening, right, is that we're supposed to leave our emotions at the door, go in, work, and then go home. So our job is just to be productive and not have any emotions with it. But the reality is we are human beings and we are comprised of a lot of different emotions. And oftentimes our emotions really help us make better decisions. We need to allow them to come out and we need to be able to have other people accept us and accept those emotions. They don't have to agree with them. I think that's one of the challenges with listening is oftentimes people perceive that if I'm going to understand you, that means I agree with you, but it doesn't. It just means I understand. I understand. I see where you're coming from. I'm coming from a totally different place, and that's okay. That is absolutely okay. So listening really is the act of cognitive listening is the act of making meaning of the stimuli that's coming in. But I think within the context of communication, listening is, oh gosh, that's a great question. And I'm, let me be silent for a second and see what comes to me there. Listening is a way of being accepted as an individual, not only despite, but because of the different ways that we see the world.
Oh, I like that a lot. I like that a lot. I have a friend who does a lot of work around belonging, the difference between belonging and fitting in. Fitting in is trying to, of course, fit into what everybody else wants for their comfort. Belonging is being accepted into whatever group because of who you are, what you bring to the group. That really dovetails beautifully. And
yeah,
so much of our listening is, it is reflexive at times, because those emotions, which are really important and all too human, sometimes emotions in our ego really get the better of us when we're actually just trying to understand the other person.
Yeah, absolutely.
What if you are the person who is rarely listened to, and this could be a shy person or an introverted person, or in many male-dominated fields, it could be the woman who's in the room who is being overlooked, or somebody who's just really trying to get into the conversation and can't. How do you find ways to be listened to?
And one of the big tenets that I always like other people to understand is that listening is an action. Because those nonverbals of listening are really defined by our cultures, and they don't transfer across cultures, we can't really tell if somebody is listening to us by our nonverbals. And a lot of people have that idea that, oh, I can look at you and you're smiling and you're nodding, so that must mean that you're listening to me. But we have all fake listened in our lives, and if we can do it, anybody else can do it to us. So the only way that people know the meaning that we've made is how we speak after we listen. And that's the action of listening. We have to show other people. So for people who don't get their voice heard a lot, one of the things that they can do is really enter the conversation by first paraphrasing or confirming what the other person just said. So being that sounding board and saying, okay, I think I understand what you're saying, Liz. Let me check this out. I think what you're saying is blah, 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 blah. Did I get that right? And by reflecting that back to you, you get to go, oh, wait a minute. No, that's not exactly what I mean. Or I missed this part. Or yeah, that's exactly what I mean. But it gives you the time to really reflect upon what you just said. And I am helping you listen to yourself, but I've also entered the conversation by letting you know what I heard as the takeaway from that. And then if I disagree with you, or if I have a different perspective, I can just say, I totally agree with everything you just said. I guess my only concern is that we're not really addressing this part of the problem. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think a lot of people are going to have that part of the problem. So maybe that's something that we should look at as well. Coming into the conversation by first reflecting the other is a way for people who are more shy or introverted to enter the conversation.
Laura, do you have any models that you can look to who are in the public eye, who model good listening, who we can look at and say, oh, they really know how to have a conversation, respond in real time, which I think is really difficult. Sometimes later on, I'll say, oh, I could have responded this way. I could have had a better answer or a better interaction with that person. And instead, I was reactive.
Yeah. And that's a dangerous question for me. And I'll tell you why it's a dangerous question, because my political alliances would definitely be coming out. So I'm going to try to broaden it by saying, anybody who has done a listening tour, where they go into a room and they're much more interested in what the audience has to say than they are in talking themselves. In a situation where somebody listens 80% of the time and only responds 20% of the time, talks 20% of the time, I think that those oftentimes are better listeners because they're not trying to co-opt the conversation or get the other party to think that they're right, and prove themselves. So I think the amount of time that people do spend listening oftentimes we find better listeners who speak less and listen more. Integrated within that has to be the acknowledgement of the other person as well. So doing those skills like reflecting, I understand that you think this is important. Did I get that right? I'm not going to say you're right or you're wrong with it, right? I'm just going to make sure that I understand it.
So much of the information that we transmit and receive are done in real time. You know, we have these very quick interactions and we want to make the best of them. What are a couple of things to remember? Because it is such a practice.
Yeah, it is a practice. One of my favorites is actually a two-part skill that I like to help people learn. And what it is specifically, and humor me a little bit because I need to tell you the research behind this and then why I think this is such an important skill. In the United States culture, generally, when we're asked a question, we'll respond within a half a second. A half a second, so quick. And research supports that we don't even know what we're going to say in a half a second. So all of us, me included, start talking before we even know where we're headed, which is why so often in conversations, you're going to hear people say, wait a minute, what was the question again? After they've just talked for 3 minutes, right? They've totally forgot what the question was. One of the things that you want to do is encourage silence for hard questions that you want people to think about. And I like to call this giving silence. And you can just say something like, Liz, I want you to really think about this before you answer me, because I've just then given you permission to have this silence. And I think that that's a really important element of it. And then after you talk, we go into silence again, and I am going to bite my tongue for at least three seconds, because in the US culture, 3 seconds is about where we start getting uncomfortable with silence in a conversation. So if I can bite my tongue for at least 3 seconds, I'm moving us into that uncomfortable area. So one of two things will happen. First of all, the other person might be that filler inner like I was and continue talking. And then you're going to get more information, which is terrific, because the more information that we have, the better decisions we make. If they don't break the silence, then I want you to just unbite your tongue, right? Quit biting your tongue and say, what else? Or tell me more about that. And you can see that this is designed to get the other to continue talking, because we all know that they didn't tell us everything. No one tells us everything on the first response. So we're going to get more information and more important information. And as humans, oftentimes we don't start with the hard stuff. We start with the softball.
That's a really great strategy, too, for somebody who might say something that is off-putting, prejudicial, or is in some ways, you know, minimizes who you are. I know that there are people who ask a question that feels inappropriate. And I've learned to say, well, that's an interesting question. Why do you ask that? So sometimes I just like to turn it around, because if people reflect, they have to go back and think, well, why am I asking that? Or why am I saying that? Mm-hmm. And it puts a little bit more responsibility on someone else. It's a little sneaky, but going to the broader and, you know, not giving anything away. But we live in times when all of us could be better at listening. And certainly the national conversation, the global conversation is not good. There are not a lot of good listeners out there. Do you see any ways to repair, to start to build on better ways to communicate writ broadly?
Yes, but they're not easy. They are easy, but they're not easy because we don't get the instruction in this. You know, so some of the instruction has to be compromise is not a bad word, or compromise is not a dirty word. We have to understand that just because we think something or we feel something, that doesn't make us right. That just makes us having our own opinion or our own idea. But that doesn't mean that it is the right or the only idea. So I think, first of all, we have to give up this thought that we're right. And that's really hard to do. That's really hard to do. So a little strategy I have for that is take a day and walk around that thinking everyone else has the answer but you. And so you're going to have to really listen to them to find out what the answer is, because you don't have that answer. And it's amazing what you can hear with that. And that's everyone in your life that you interact with that day, from your partner, your children, your colleagues, and even the clerk at the gas station that you go to or the convenience store that you go to. You have to really listen to them as if they have all of the right answers and you don't. That's a humbling that I think is really hard for many people to get through their head, because like I used to think I was always right, a lot of people think that they're always right. The second then is believing that compromise is a good thing, particularly because we have so many people living on this planet. We're not the king or the queen. There have to be other ways to look at things, and there have to be other ways to do things that will make other people feel comfortable and included and like they belong as well. So we have to really figure out what those things are and then move towards without just trying to win.
Do you know of any global or national programs that are trying to instill more of this? Because it feels like it could be an answer to a lot of the problems that are inflicting society right now.
Yeah, there are a couple of programs out there, and I wish I would have jotted these down before, but I think there's one organization that's called Brave Angels or Braver Angels.
Yes.
That is really trying to do something along that line. Juliana Taffer, I don't know if you're familiar with her or not, but she's a filmmaker, and she did a fascinating documentary that debuted, I think, probably right at the beginning or right before the pandemic, where she took two people on opposite sides of a specific issue. So abortion was one of the issues, what to do with people who want to come into the United States who are not United States citizens. So immigration, that was another issue. And she recorded conversations where these two people had to really, their goal was to try to understand the other side. Mm. And so she now has an organization. So her last name is Taffer, T-A-F-U-R. Yes, T-A-F-U-R. And she does some really great work. And I can't remember the exact name of her organization. And there are a couple of other organizations that do have Listen the title, who try to do more education on both sides. And I think that that's something that's really important when you're vetting an organization, is they're not taking a specific political stand. They're just trying to help individuals understand the other side. My local library did this actually during the pandemic. We just got on a Zoom call and they would toss out topics that could be lightning topics, but we all had to agree to be respectful and really try to understand the other perspectives while getting them to understand our perspective as well.
Try to put yourself in someone else's shoes for a few minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's amazing what you learn about them and why they believe what they believe. Another great tip is when somebody's really strong in their belief and it's opposite of yours, asking, when's the first time that you developed that belief? Ooh. Because it always goes back to a really powerful story. Yeah. And when you learn the story, you totally understand why they believe what they believe.
Yeah. Sometimes we have to, you know, what is it? The presenting problem isn't always the problem, or there's always a route to it, which goes to your point of asking for more, you know, listening for more, being mm-hmm. patient with perhaps the silence. It's not a lack of response. Sometimes it's just being really thoughtful.
Yeah.
We have a lot to chew on today. I really appreciate you making time to be here, Laura. And
well, thank you. I really enjoyed being here. And if I could add one last thing that I think is really important. Communication, when we use this term communication, is split in half. And that's half speaking and half listening. So communicating and speaking are not two different things. Communication means listening plus speaking.
If you want to know more about Laura Janusik, you can turn to our liner notes. If you like what you hear on Embark, what you're listening to, so to speak, share this episode, tell a friend, and please subscribe. If you have an idea, want to get in touch, say hi, Liz@embarkthepodcast.com. With so much to do and so little time in which to do it, I truly appreciate you spending this time, this half hour, on Embark. Have a great week. Have a great week.